Hey everybody, Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you a classic episode of The Jug Life. This is episode number 75, Differences in Male and Female Training. In this episode, Max and I discuss the implications of changes to volume, intensity, frequency, maybe exercise selection, and even some psychological differences in coaching male and female athletes. Enjoy the episode, like it, share it, leave us a five-star review on iTunes. If you're interested in online coaching, visit jtsstrength.com and check out all of our online coaching services from Juggernaut AI to one-on-one club coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, powerbuilding, strongman, and super total.
Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Jug Life Podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like weightlifters, powerlifters, and CrossFitters get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/juglife and use the promo code JUGLIFE to support the show and see if you qualify.
Hey everybody, what is up? Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I'm joined as always by Merrific Max Montana. You can go ahead and Google what that means.
It sounds like it means terrific and muscular.
Yeah, it's not too far off. Not too far off. I began Googling M adjectives that begin with the word M. If you have other funny words that I can call Max, please send those in.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a request we want.
They have to start with an M though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's fine. There's no vulgarity with an M.
No. The M word?
The M word.
Well, maybe we'll find out. Yeah. There could be one in a different language. Okay. Insults in different languages are not only acceptable, they're encouraged.
Encouraged, for sure.
So in today's episode, we're going to be talking to you about the differences in training male lifters and female lifters and some practical examples and practical considerations for weightlifting and powerlifting. I think the first thing that we kind of need to discuss, and sorry to burst your bubble here, but the differences are not that great. They are not changes in the type of training that needs to be done between a male lifter and a female lifter, but is rather changes in the magnitude of the training, the amount of volume, the frequency, the relative intensity of the training. And a lot of these considerations, as you try and understand the principles behind them and the principles that are guiding these decisions, will also help better inform you about how to make adjustments in training for beginner to advanced athletes, athletes of high weight classes or low weight classes, athletes of different ages. We get questions all the time about training for masters lifters, and we have a online coaching specifically for masters weightlifting. But a lot of times when you get these questions on Facebook or Instagram or whatever about, I'm blah, 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 I'm 45 years old, like how do I need to change my training? There's so much context that goes into that. And all the things we're going to talk about today, even though the examples we'll be giving are specific to male versus female training, the ideas can be extrapolated and applied to adjustments for masters, to adjustments for beginner to advanced, heavyweight to lightweight. So if you're a coach, you're a gym owner, you're writing in programs for a wide variety of people, hopefully we can learn some important stuff to help you write better programs for the wide population of people that that you work with. But before we get into it, we're going to take a quick break for a strength history minute with John Cuck. And John Cuck totaled over 2,300, I want to say 2,350, with like a 900-pound squat, 900-pound bench. Phenomenally strong guy, phenomenally challenging training program, particularly in the deadlift. sort of a legend of powerlifting who isn't quite as legendary as he should be, mm-hmm. with a huge total like that from way back in the 70s, not a guy who gets talked a lot about. So hopefully you can learn something about one of the forefathers of this sport, I guess. Yeah.
The godfather.
There might have been more than four of them. Who knows? Yeah. So, John Cuck, Strength History Minute, take it away.
As the owner of the fifth highest raw powerlifting total of all time, John Cuck's name is surprisingly rare to hear as an all-time legend of the sport. Cuck won IPF World Championships 3 times and added an AAU World Championship to his title. Put together an amazing 2350 raw total via a 905 squat, 600-pound bench, 845-pound deadlift, and a belt and ace bandage knee wraps at 322 body weight. In another meet, Cuck also pulled an 870 deadlift. Powerlifting in the 70s, which was a much different place than today. Unified under one federation, Cuck's World Championships were true World Championships. He had to defeat the likes of Don Reinhout, John Cole, and Jim Williams to win them. Cuck's training was simple but effective, training the main three lifts for challenging volumes, using variations to address his weak points, building muscle with bodybuilding assistance work, and utilizing linear periodization. He was the first man to squat 900 and total over 2300, a true legend of the sport.
All right, so hopefully you learned some good stuff about legendary lifter John Cuck, and we are going to get into the differences in training males and females. So there are three main areas which are going to create these distinctions and force the differences between the genders and lifting. First is going to be the size of the lifter. Now, men are generally bigger than women. With all the stuff we're talking about today, it is generalities. So the size of the lifter first has to be considered, and that's going to be not just body weight and amount of muscle being carried, and those are going to be important to consider, but also the height of the lifter. So, we might give some examples of normalizing, like, men and women in the same weight class and differences in application of training there, but that's the first reason why women are going to need to train a bit differently than men. The strength of the lifter. The absolute weight on the bar is generally going to be more for men than it is for women, and that's definitely going to cause for some changes in volume and frequency and all the things we're going to talk about. And finally, the hormonal differences between men and women also necessitates needs for adjustment in the training. Men have more testosterone, even in situations where females may be using exogenous hormones. Men probably still have more testosterone in a lot of cases, and that's also going to create a need for adjustments in the training. So now that we have a bit of the context of why some of these changes are happening, let's look at how they practically manifest themselves. And first off, that's going to be in training frequency, because in general, female lifters are smaller, shorter, less body weight, less muscle mass. They're going to be able to and need to, need to from an optimal training standpoint, to train more frequently because the training that they're doing is not quite as stimulating. If we have, let's take Marissa, for example, an incredibly highly qualified female lifter. Marissa is 5 feet tall on the dot. We measured her again yesterday. She was very, very proud of herself for hanging in there at 5'00", 60 inches.
Perfect.
Nothing right more, nothing less.
There's a mark on the wall. You can go check.
So a highly qualified lifter like her, she's only 5 feet tall. She's not moving the bar that far. So, compared to the majority of male lifters are going to be taller than that. They're moving the bar farther. They're doing more work per rep. And more work means more recovery is needed. So less frequent training is going to occur. Even a male lifter who is the same height, also 5 feet tall, even though they might be moving the bar the same distance, he is likely larger carrying. Even if we were to really normalize things here and it's the same height and same body weight, as jacked as Marissa is, and that's very jacked, a male lifter of similar qualification would probably be even more muscular than her or have a lower body fat percentage. That means more muscle to damage, and that more damaged muscle takes longer to recover from. But the general difference between male and female lifters, the men are bigger, they're moving the bar further, they're damaging more muscle, and that takes longer to recover from. So male lifters of comparable qualifications will not need to train quite as frequently as female lifters. And a lot of the discussions of frequency and finding optimal frequency could get into a bit of a splitting hairs type of thing, because practicality has to come into it as well. We could get into like, okay, this person can deadlift heavy on Tuesday morning and Thursday night, and this person can go Tuesday morning and Friday morning. And if you really want to do that kind of thing, go, you know, be my guest and go for it. But from a practical example, it may not lead to that big of an adjustment. But yeah, I think the usually the most frequent training I have any male lifters doing for powerlifting would be squatting up to 3 times a week, benching at most 4 times a week, and deadlifting twice. And female lifters, particularly on the bench press, it's much more frequent for me to have female lifters benching 3-4 times a week, while most of my male lifters are 2, maybe 3 times. It's much more common for them to be squatting 3 times a week. And that's not necessarily 3 big sessions, maybe 2 primary sessions and a 3rd smaller session, where a lot of the male lifters are only squatting twice a week, or in some cases only once a week. And then the deadlift, yeah, I can't think of any male lifter I have outside of a special injury workaround situation where they deadlift more than twice a week. And even that's usually 1 primary session and 1 smaller secondary session. While it's not totally uncommon to have female lifters deadlifting twice, maybe even 3 times a week, with 2 primary and 1 secondary or sort of more assistance session. What about for weightlifting stuff?
Similar for weightlifting. The higher the frequency, or the frequency is going to be higher, obviously, in weightlifting than powerlifting, because the movements are more technical. But you might find a situation where, you know, we're probably always going to be, both male and female, will be practicing the snatch and clean and jerk as exercises almost every session in training. It's a matter of when those very heavy lifts take place, 90% and above. For women, it can happen as often as, you know, maybe once a week. With men, they may be once every 2 weeks or once every 10 days, simply because larger numbers, like we talked about, larger weights, bigger people, going to take longer to recover. And that extra, from a practicality standpoint, that extra day may just lend itself better to being spread out more than a day to the entire training week, right? The microcycle being, instead of being 10 days, is still 7. We just have spaced things out to accommodate for that, because a lot of practicality comes into play there. As far as squatting, very similar. In weightlifting, a lot of lifters are going to squat. Men are probably going to squat slightly less frequently, simply because the weights are bigger. Women more frequently. And then technical practice, actual technical exercises, because they're done basically the same by each lifter, the same number of times in a week, the women's relative intensity may be higher. So where men may do snatches and clean and jerks 4 or 5 days a week, maybe 6 times a week even, their average intensity is probably going to be lower, and the discrepancy between days is probably a little bit more larger. So heavier day on Monday, maybe lighter day on Tuesday, you know, maybe 90% Monday, 80% Tuesday, 85% Wednesday, 70% Thursday, whereas women may be closer to 85 or 90% Monday, 85% Tuesday, 90% Wednesday, 80% Thursday. As an example, where that average intensity can climb up simply because they're not fatiguing themselves as much.
It's going to be particularly training for the upper body as where you really see higher frequency for female lifters.
Right.
And this, you know, men can train their upper body relatively more frequently than they can their lower body, because the muscles of the upper body are smaller, so they recover faster. And then upper body muscles for females are even smaller than that, and relatively smaller than, relatively more small than the muscles of their lower body compared to their male counterparts. So that's why you're going to see that extra increase in upper body training frequency for female lifters. The changes in volume, and this is total weekly volume and probably per session volume, is also going to be a big difference between male and female lifters. Female lifters can tolerate more volume. Some of this goes with the size of the lifter, because they're not moving the bar as far, because it's a little bit smaller muscles. Some of that's going to go with the strength of the lifter. You know, people can do more sets and more reps if the weight's not as heavy, because it's not as neurologically taxing, it's not as structurally taxing to joints and ligaments. So female lifters are going to do a bit more volume. But again, these are not changes in the type of training, it's changes in the degree of training. So while we may have a male lifter whose MAV, maximum adaptable volume, during a strength training block is, let's say, 14 to 18 sets of squat related exercises per week. The female lifter, they're not going to be doing double that, a similarly qualified, both with class one totals, let's say, for powerlifting. But instead of it being 14 to 18, maybe it's 16 to 20. So it's a small increase, but it is more. I think the highest volume that Marissa and Kristen have gotten up to in the recent sets or recent weeks, they've gone as high as 18, 20 sets of squats in a week, with one session of that being as much as 11 sets of six, 11 sets of six to eight. Wow. Where that would be higher than I have any male lifter doing, but it's not like the men are doing six sets and the women doing 10 or 12 sets. It's small, subtle differences, but on the whole, female lifters doing higher volume.
Right. I actually had Shaco told me about a smaller male lifter he had, really famous bench presser, doing a pyramid, where he would do working up in the sets, doing something like 120 repetitions in one workout, and exceeding, 90%. So small man, though, same thing, where there's a male, big weight still, but smaller, going to be at a higher side of the volume there. For weightlifting, the changes in volume are probably maybe a little bit more extreme, simply because once fatigue starts to set in for a very large, a super heavyweight male versus a 48 kilo woman, the weights are bigger, fatigue may set in, it starts to deteriorate technique a lot faster. And because the technique is such a critical aspect to our training, you're going to see that volume drop off a little bit more, I think, with a larger men than you would in powerlifting, because, in your case, Chad can execute a tremendous amount of volume, not just for being super, but also just in general, versus Marissa. Their training is probably less significantly different in terms of total amount of volume, whereas if Chad was a super heavyweight weightlifter, he's probably going to do significantly less volume than he would than Alyssa Ritchie, who's 48 kilos. So I think that's the one kind of difference with weightlifting and powerlifting, that the smaller lifters are going to fatigue a little bit less. They can definitely handle quite a bit more volume than the larger counterparts and the women and men.
How would the training of, to normalize things a little bit more, we have the national champion in both of the smallest weight classes, the men's weight class, men's smallest class, 56s, Mike Fox. Yeah, they're just good. Strongest midgets in all of America. So we have Mike Fox, 56 kilo national champ, and Alyssa Ritchie, 48 kilo national champ. How much taller is Mike than Alyssa?
Maybe an inch and a half? I don't know if he's even an inch taller.
Yeah. So Alyssa is 4'10 and a half, and those half inches when you're only 4 foot, when you're less than 5 feet, that's important. So you got to get, she might even be 4'10 and 2/3 of an inch. And I think Mike is
five.
Was Mike taller or shorter than you, Shorty?
I think he was a little bit shorter, actually.
I think he's shorter. I think he's under 5 feet.
Under 5 feet?
I'm going to get
the biggest calves ever.
Let's give him 5 feet tall. Let's just say he's five.
So he's an inch and a half, and he walks around 10 kilos heavier than Alyssa. How much different is the volume of their training?
It's actually quite a bit more in Michael's favor, simply because I think Michael's he has a little bit different ability to adapt to the volume. Although I believe Alyssa probably could tolerate more volume, but Michael is doing a significant amount of work. The average intensity of his work is a little bit lower, just because from an individual differences standpoint, he does benefit a little bit from a lower intensity, whereas Alyssa trains a little bit heavier in general. But they're relatively similar in the amount of volume they're both doing from a week to week standpoint.
I've seen some of those early phase days for Mike that were like
eight sets of four snatch.
Yeah, six times four plus one.
Yeah. Because he trains with a little bit lower average intensity, he does a lot more, quite a bit more. Whereas Alyssa benefits a little bit more simply because of, and it's tough because we're talking about two individuals that have very specific cases, but she does benefit from a little more high intensity lifting, whereas he benefits a lot more from lower intensity but much larger volumes. But overall, if we compare him, he's probably the highest volume of anyone we have. He's doing a significant amount, but essentially they're the lowest end of the weight classes, right?
Yeah. But I guess the other kind of close male to female and comparable level lifters we'd have would be maybe Pomp at 85 and Q at 75.
Their volume is much closer.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're much more similar in that Pomp probably does a little bit less volume than Q at similar weight classes. And Q is also comes from, she's a little bit older than Pomp, not that that factors in a ton, but those guys are much closer in the total volume they both do, and the intensity there is probably much more similar, the average.
So do we have any athletes who are actually a good example of the things that we're trying to talk about? Of a female doing a lot more than the male at a comfortable weight class?
Who do we have? Oh, no, we don't have a 63.
We do, Christy.
Christy, well, I'm trying to think of a male. Christy and...
John Mendoza?
Christy and John Mendoza. Christy definitely does significantly more volume at a significantly higher intensity than John Mendoza does.
So scratch all that other stuff we talked about for this one.
Sorry. Yeah, these are bad examples. Christy definitely does. Christy Brewer does a lot more volume with a much higher average intensity than any of our 62 kilo male, John Mendoza. She actually probably does more volume than, she does definitely more volume than the heavier men, and closer to the same amount of volume as a lighter male like Mike Fox. And her intensity is definitely higher.
And that's going to be the other area where you see a big discrepancy in general, save some of these specific examples that we just tried to give, of male versus female training, is that females can train at relatively higher intensities. So that's going to be the average intensity of their whole session or whole week or whole mesocycle. But even if we were to look at doing, like, how many reps can they do at this given percentage? A 5-rep max in the squat for most male lifters, maybe 84 to about 88%, where it wouldn't be uncommon for female lifters to be able to do 5 reps with 90%, even into the low 90%, 90, 91, 92.
And those examples, while not perfectly illustrating that point, they do illustrate the point that in order for Mike Fox to achieve a higher training volume than Alyssa, his intensity, relative intensity, his absolute intensity has to come down significantly more to accomplish that. Whereas Alyssa can maintain a very similar volume or just slightly less than that, which much, much more significantly heavy weights. Mike Fox is not attempting, he's not having these sessions with these 90% weights nearly as often or as much. In order to do that, he has to reduce the training intensity. So you can look at it from the other perspective, is that in order for them to accomplish similar looking volumes, they're going to have to change the other factors.
Yeah, and I think those kind of considerations are important to understand, that Alyssa and Mike, though they're just two people and it's just a very small sample size, are good examples to give because they're so similarly qualified.
Right.
Both national champions, both challenging American record weights. For us to compare Alyssa, 48 kilo national champion, to a 56 kilo man who's been weightlifting for 3 months, and isn't lifting these big weights, you'd see a much different relationship. So again, the female lifters are going to be training at that relatively higher intensity. They're going to be able to do more reps at the higher percentages in a given set, and more reps at the higher percentage over the course of the whole training session, week, month, whole training cycle, which you're going to see a higher relative intensity. So when writing a program for a female, if maybe you'd write for the men, 80% for 4 sets of 5, for the similarly qualified female, that might be 83% for 4 sets of 5, or 80% for 4 sets of 6. Just a little bit, a small change, but it really adds up over the course of the entire session, over the course of the week and the mesocycle.
Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like powerlifters, weightlifters, and CrossFitters. Life insurance companies calculate your policy rates based on your nearest age, not your actual age, and rates increase as you get older. So lock in the best rate possible by getting a free quote today. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4% and 33% on their life insurance. Health IQ can save our customers up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ, and you must qualify to get the special rate. Visit the website for more details there. Health IQ is the official life insurance partner of USA Weightlifting, and you can go visit healthiq.com/juglife. Use the promo code JUGLIFE to see if you qualify and get your free quote today.
You know, all of these things that we've talked about, size of the lifter, strength of the lifter, hormonal considerations, and how those impact changes in frequency, changes in volume, and differences in relative intensity. One of the areas of training where it's really going to show up is in the proportion of phases, and particularly the length of peaking blocks and the length of the taper. So it's going to matter through all the phases that females, particularly in the bench press, are going to benefit from a longer hypertrophy cycles, and then with that as well, longer strength cycles. And if both of those are longer, the peak has to be much shorter. Building muscle has got to be a greater consideration for females in the upper body because naturally less muscular in the upper body. So female lifters in powerlifting are going to have longer hypertrophy cycles in all the lifts, but particularly in the bench press. And then very, very short peaking cycles, again, short in all the lifts relative to men of a similar qualification. But female lifters, a lot of times, you know, maybe like a 1 or 2 week peak where they're doing singles and doubles in the bench press could be enough. And that's just because the weights aren't that heavy, so it doesn't take that long to build up to them. Also, because of the lack of testosterone and less muscle mass, females will become detrained more quickly. So if you have a long peaking block or a long taper as part of that peaking block for a female lifter, detraining and loss of muscle is going to be a real risk. So, you know, if we have a too long of a peaking block or taper for the female lifter, you're going to have a much greater chance of a loss of muscle, a loss of fitness going into a meet, and we definitely want to avoid that. So shorter peaking blocks, you know, if a male, you know, an intermediate male, so let's say 4 years of hard training experience, and in a middleweight men's weight class, like a 198, he may benefit from a 6-7 day taper, while a female of intermediate female, 4 years of training, in a middleweight women's weight class, like a 148 or 72 kilos, maybe for the USAPL, that same athlete might only need, you know, a 4 or 5 day taper. Again, it's not drastic changes, but it's those small adjustments, and those small adjustments are, you know, and adding up these small considerations on top of each other is what's going to really make optimal training. So when is the last time, you know, when your weightlifters are taking their heaviest lifts relative to competition, how does that differ male to female?
That's, again, one of the more significant things with weightlifting. Larger, more qualified men are going to take their heaviest lifts further out, generally between 10 and 14 days in the clean and jerk and possibly 7 to 10 days in the snatch. As that number starts to decrease as an absolute value and that lifter becomes female, those numbers can get closer to the competition. So, you know, in the case of someone who's a 48 kilo female, lower qualification, obviously smaller numbers, their lifts can take place. They can take maximum attempts, you know, as close as 5 days, 4 days even before the competition, really depending on the qualification. But they're somewhere in that spectrum. Super heavyweight male, very highly qualified, might take their last lifts at 14 days out. Their last heavy lifts at 14 days out, lower qualification or a smaller female, they're going to be closer to 5 days. And if, you know, you have a lower qualification female, possibly, you know, under a year or two of lifting, they could probably even take maximum lifts, you know, several days before the competition and still perform fine or basically at maximum, if not more.
So if you go in the training hall, at a USAW event, 2 days before sessions, you should see that the female lifters are training at relatively higher intensities, maybe an extra set here, you know, one or two extra sets, maybe a couple doubles instead of all singles, small adjustments, but to keep that fitness up a little bit higher. The same idea is being applied for powerlifting as well. And I think we're, from a practical coaching standpoint, where some of the biggest differences in these things will manifest themselves are the psychological differences between male and female lifters. And again, these are generalities from our experiences. So if you find yourself being an outlier to this, don't take offense to anything that we're saying. We're trying to inform, you know, you with our experiences of training high-level lifters, male and female, in powerlifting and weightlifting. Yeah, I think the best lifter I coach is Marissa, you know, IPF world champion, but we have, you know, guys like Andy Huang, Steve Gentile, T. Papula, similarly accomplished lifters on the men's side, and other great female lifters too. And one of the biggest, one of the biggest differences, and something that's going to sort of dictate changes throughout, is I think female lifters tend to undersell their abilities more, right, while male lifters tend to oversell their own abilities more, and want to be overly aggressive in weight selection, where, you know, I'm having to kind of pull the reins back on the men's lifters a lot of times and keep them from messing up their own program really by doing too much, right, or going too heavy, while the female lifters seem more content and consistent to stick with the plan, and maybe have to be prodded into those heavy attempts a bit more often.
Yeah, I would say the same. The same is definitely true for weightlifting. I think sometimes, though, in general, weightlifters like to take, maybe choose silly attempts just because that's the nature of what they're doing. But men are always generally on that side going to be wanting to take heavier lifts, especially in the taper, which is can be an issue. A lot of times you go to these national events and you see very strong lifters maybe taking really heavy attempts in the warm-up hall, or in the last week or so on Instagram, you see a lot of big lifts happening at the meet, lack of fitness, and then, you know, less than stellar performances. And you can only wonder if perhaps they weren't exhausting themselves with these heavy attempts that close to the competition, if their result would be better there. It's generally not the case. You don't see that with women as much, where they're hitting really heavy attempts, you know, within that taper phase, that 10-day period before the competition, and then really, really underperforming. There'd have to be some kind of extenuating circumstances there, I think, to see that as a commonality there.
I see with the female lifters often feeling a greater need to have felt the weight, having like confidence issues, but most frequently in the squat. And I've had to make adjustments for training. Like this was something that Marissa struggled with for a long time, is her 3 rep maxes or 5 rep maxes, 6, 8 rep maxes kept going up and up. And it was time to get to the singles. And it was, I don't know whether it was a psychological block of 300 pounds, 315, those kind of weights. But everything that we'd worked so hard for sort of went out the window. And I figured the only way to get her more comfortable with doing heavy singles in the squat was to do more heavy singles in the squat. So with that, began introducing pretty much every other week single all the way from hypertrophy. And while this, you know, might violate some ideas of phase potentiation that we've talked about and other stuff, you know, it was practically what she needed, and it's been very beneficial. So sort of what we did is maybe in a 12-week training plan, we'd have 3 weeks of hypertrophy, then a deload, 3 weeks of strength, and then a deload, and a 3-week peak. In that hypertrophy and strength phases, she would do 2 heavy singles in the squat. So week 1, week 3, then we have a deload, and then she'd go again in strength, week 5 and week 6, and then peaking, we're getting into squat and singles 3 times a week. But way back in hypertrophy, you know, she's not going to hit a PR squat in hypertrophy because of the high fatigue, but we just began preparing her for the heavier weights. So this was a plan that we began before 2016 USAPL Nationals. And during this time, her best squat went from, her meet PR went from 303 to 319. But at her previous meet, IPF World, she only squatted 292. So we went from one meet to the next, squatting 292 to 319 in a, you know, 3.5-4 month span. And this was a big reason why. So that first week of hypertrophy, we're just going to do a single in the squat and then do all the other normal hypertrophy work. And we started very conservatively, like, you know, 275 for a single. And the next time we came back to it, it was, you know, 281 or 286 2 weeks later. And then 2 weeks after that, it was 286, 292. And the numbers had to be low because our goal was to build confidence, and you have to be successful to do that. And the numbers had to be low because fatigue was greater from higher volumes of training around it. So she wouldn't have been ready to squat, you know, in the high 290s or low 300s. And we just wanted to kind of ease into it. So it was like 275, 281, 292, 297. And then by the time we were in peaking, we got to go 303, 308, 314, 319. But she had had so much, you know, more success with singles, and it wasn't as jarring of a transition to go from not having touched any real heavy weights during hypertrophy or strength, and then a bit of a jarring transition into peaking with that. So, the need to prepare the female athlete psychologically for a heavy weight, where you keep heavy singles in more frequently, can be something that's really useful. And because the weights aren't as absolutely heavy, they don't generate as high levels of fatigue. You know, if I try to do the same idea of what I just talked about with Marissa, with like Andy Huang, you know, who squats 843, he's going to have to take 750, you know, for a single the first week of hypertrophy. That's going to be way tougher to recover from, and way more damaging and detracting really from the rest of the training that we're doing than this one single from Marissa, 275. So that's a big difference. And I think in the bench press for female lifters, training very close to maximum is going to be beneficial there, because the female bench press is such a fine tuned exercise where, you know, 1 kilo jump in weight, it's like you go from an RPE 8.5 to a 11, you know, with a one or a 2.5 kilo jump, because that represents such a greater percentage. So more frequent heavy training in the bench press, I think, is very beneficial there.
Right. It's also, all these things apply not just to male and female, right? As we, Chad said in the beginning, these also apply to qualification levels, right? Lower qualification, smaller absolute weights, these rules, these things will apply to them. A lifter could take heavy singles in, you know, the squat or the bench press more frequently, more often, earlier, starting that process early in the training cycle, simply because the absolute intensity is not there. Same kind of thing applies in weightlifting, in that the technical aspect of the lift is so important. And, you know, in a lot of cases, the lifters need to feel the technique. They need to feel consistent with it. It's difficult to get far away from that highly technical aspect, the skill side of lifting a maximum intensity weight, whether it's squatting, benching, snatching, you know, clean and jerk. Starting that process earlier is also more possible with female lifters, because their ability to tolerate, or their ability to use higher percentages of their maximum in training, a higher relative intensity. So that process can start earlier, it's a little more beneficial, and it suits itself well to the psychological aspect of keeping somebody confident in those lifts approaching the competition, right?
What about in competition? What psychological differences have you seen male to female lifters?
From my experience, male lifters sometimes believe they overestimate their abilities, or they fixate on what they should or shouldn't be able to do. And a lot of times, you know, in competition, that can end up being a huge Achilles heel, in that you're stuck with an idea. They might believe, I have to lift this much weight. If you say, no, we need this much, or you call for less, they almost lose motivation for it. With female lifters, that's generally never been an issue. Their confidence is usually, you know, if they've instilled their trust in you as a coach, then they usually seem fine no matter what changes up or down we're making. From a perspective of you know, competitiveness, there's definitely an equal playing field there. In fact, I think in some cases the women are almost more competitive from a standpoint of coming back after missing, or coming back after failure, or being the underdog. You know, some, you know, it just depends on the person, but there's definitely been cases where I've had men that are just not, they're not as aggressive coming from behind or coming from, you know, the bottom of the pack, whereas women seem like they maybe are okay with that. That's not as big an issue. So
yeah, again, speaking in generalities, I found that, yeah, that women tend to do a lot of the good stuff better in training.
Yeah.
You know, more adaptable to changes in the plan, better focus on the quality of lift and technique rather than just sort of the ego of how much weight was on the bar, even if it looked like shit.
I will say one thing that's unique to women and men. A man can walk in the gym, well, and this is a generality, I'll probably get blasted for it, but a man can walk in the gym, clean and jerk a weight, stumble around the platform, press out both arms back and forth, barely hold it, drop it behind him. It's a PR. He'll turn around, high five his buddies, and he's happy as can be. It's a training PR, training make, you know, maybe didn't actually lift the weight. Sometimes you get women that come in and they will make a lift that's absolutely flawless, technically perfect, no issues, drop the bar and be like, my shoes were tied wrong, and just be utterly negative about it because maybe it didn't feel right. And so I will say that a lot of times, in a lot of cases, the women are very critical of their performance, and those aspects can become, there's something to be aware of as a coach, is those aspects can magnify themselves as time goes on. 10, 15, 20, 30 workouts in a row where you're being negative with yourself, and your self-assessments turn into self-criticism, which turns into negativity. That can be a downward spiral where nothing's ever going to be good enough. And then you have this position, you're in this position where you can't feel positive about your lifting until you find some negative aspect about it. And then you end up in a place where maybe you're chasing down these really silly things that you don't need to chase around. You lose sight of the bigger picture. The other side of that coin, the men, if you're never holding yourself to the same standard, if your jerks are soft, your lockouts aren't good, you're not really completing the lifts, you're cutting your depth, and you're just, you know, jerking your ego off every session, it can very easily turn the opposite, right? Where you've overestimated your abilities and you have no sense of self-criticism or standard, and your lifting turns into crap, where you're not squatting to depth or whatever, west side, and you end up in a position where you've gone the opposite direction, right? Always a balance. Those are individual too, but I will say definitely to the women's side, it seems like self-criticism is a little more, self-reflection is a little more accessible to women. They I think they put themselves in that place a little more often, whereas the men maybe put themselves in this kind of, you know, well, it's fine. It's good enough.
Yeah. You know? I've had that with both Marissa and Kristen, where they want to focus more on the negative things that have happened in training and lose sight of all the positive things that they've been doing, and almost lead them to underestimate their own abilities.
Right, for sure.
Which I get frustrated with when it happens, because they're both so talented and great lifters, and I want them to embrace that. And that's when the legendary Spicy Wesley will have to come out.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen the Spicy Wesley.
I yelled 2 times.
Yeah.
Maybe 3.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
But that's just kind of a quick, you know, relatively brief overview of these differences between training men and women. So, you know, physiological things about, because of the different sizes, the different strengths, and the different absolute strengths and differences in hormones, you're going to have relatively more volume at relatively higher intensities and relatively more frequency for the female lifter compared to similarly qualified male lifters. And then the psychological aspects of training and competing that we talked about here. So hopefully this helps you make the training for your athletes a little bit better.
Here's a question for you to post in the comments. Post the answer in the comments. What demographic between weightlifting or powerlifting, what demographic, geographical region, what group of lifters probably trains the most, right? The most volume, highest average intensity, et cetera, et cetera. Post your answers and why in the comments.
And you will win nothing, except maybe we'll like the comment if it's a good answer.
a like it, then unlike it. Send a picture of the like to you, so only you know it.
That's the Ada special. Should go ahead and read our fan review this week, Mike.
Fan review this week comes from Blake Nell.
I think it's just Nell, yeah.
Blake Nell. Chad and Max are a dynamic duo of comedy and knowledge. It's such a good listen. I feel like that was a low-hanging fruit for me, and I was dreading it the whole time. I'm going to read that wrong.
Well, yeah, baby steps. Baby steps for Max. Blake, thank you for the kind words. Thank you for leaving the review on iTunes. If you hear this, send me an email or a message, chad@jtsstrength.com, and we'll give you a free shirt. If you would like the opportunity to have your review of The Jug Life read on the air, head over to iTunes, give us a 5-star review, say something nice or funny. We're probably not going to read it if it's a mean review. If it has some mean but funny parts, there's a chance that it could be read. If it's so mean that it's funny, that's a possibility too. I don't know about the can of worms that I may have just opened. But leave us a review. Give us 5 stars on there. It helps us get up in the rankings so more people like you who want to get stronger, become better coaches, do all that stuff, can find us and learn. Online coaching, we do it. You need it, probably. And you can visit juggernautcoaching.com for more information about that. Powerlifting, weightlifting, super total. That's the powerlifting, weightlifting, the baby that powerlifting and weightlifting have when That's they true. Fall in love with each other. So check that out. We got all different levels and people kicking ass in all those groups. That's juggernautcoaching.com. Subscribe to the YouTube. We're putting out three videos a week. Podcast is one, and trying to do one that's more weightlifting and one that's more powerlifting every week for you. So make sure to subscribe to the channel, like the videos, comment, ask us questions, share the videos with your friends who need to learn how to lift things better as well. Max, where can they find you?
Find me on Instagram, Max_Ada, or on Facebook. You can email me about any of the online programming or coaching options, max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram. Filling up your newsfeed all day. I feel like Max stumbling over my words today.
It's passed on to you, man.
Thank you to today's sponsor, Maple Bars and Snatch PRs. It's a lifestyle. Check out the new Juggernaut Apparel store at jtsstrength.com. You could have a flowery man deadlifting on your shirt like this, and a bunch of other new designs as well. Thanks for listening to The Jug Life. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to that classic episode of The Jug Life, Differences in Male and Female Training. Hopefully you got some good takeaways that you can use with your own training, athletes that you coach to help improve, fine-tuning the training to every athlete that you work with. If you enjoyed it, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast. Typically, we're coming out every Tuesday on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and right at jtsstrength.com. Also visit jtsstrength.com for all your online coaching needs, powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, powerbuilding, strongman, the revolutionary Juggernaut AI system, as well as all of our books and apparel. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.